Blog Talk Radio.
Cloud Hour Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Burks. Also the creator of the sports ball called The Clown Times. The Clown spelled with a K. You can find me on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. And you can find me on Facebook, just with you on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, wherever the hell you're doing. Just go to the search window and type in The Clown Times. Again, it's Clown spelled with a K. You can find me there. We have quite an ambitious show tonight. We're going to cover a lot of ground. We'll cover the XFL week one, pretty much what we liked and whatnot, as well as since my co-host and I, both are products of HBCUs, we're going to talk about North Carolina A&T leaving the MEAC, the beloved MEAC, for the Big South Conference. Talk about the ramifications surrounding that, how it affects other HBCU athletics, as well as some of the NBA trades that we liked and disliked, and last but not least, Tom Brady's future. You know, so many people have so many things to say, including one, Michael Irvin, who claims that he'll be the one to replace Dak and Big D. Dak Prescott, that is, in D.C. I don't know if I totally believe that, but that's what the man said. And if he's plugged into all things Dallas Cowboys, so who the hell knows? But anyway, help me break this all down. It's my aforementioned co-host. You know him from Yard / HBCU Sports. We're going to have about all things HBCU sports, as well as Sleazy Radio on Facebook Live. We'll hear him and his crew every Tuesday night. And you can catch him on, I forgot the name of the website, where he's a contributor, Hero Sports, that he's a contributor to. So, one on Dwayne Nash is back in the house. What's up, D? How you doing?
Man, oh man, Scott, I am still reeling from last week. It's been a combination of things, of course, like you said before, the aforementioned news of A&T moving to the Big South, and then week one of the XFL, and then, of course, NBA All-Star Weekend is coming up this weekend. So
right. It's
just been right. A whirlwind of sporting events, man. I've been trying to, you know, keep my eyes wherever I can, man. It's just, you got to keep your head on the swivel, baby. You know, it's February.
Yes, it is. So that includes, like, the up-and-coming NBA All-Star Weekend, as you mentioned, as well as going to lead into the last half of the college basketball season. You know, March Madness is literally right over the corner. So there's a lot to get to, including the one XFL. This is the XFL, my sorry, as what's the name of the commissioner of the WWE? McMahon.
Vince McMahon. Vincent Kennedy McMahon, yes.
There you go. Excuse me, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, for those of you who are nasty. you know, I would say this. I never thought I'd see the XFL come back after their embarrassing debut a few years ago. Hell, I think it's, what was it? Has it been almost 10 years ago? But
It's been almost 20. It's 2001.
Damn, that's right. Right. Wow.
Yeah.
God, it's we're getting old. But anyway, it's a lot of things that were different this time around. First of all, they have better, and this is the lifeblood of any sports league. They have better broadcast contracts, you know, with the ESPN and Fox family of networks. So that's good for them. I mean, the fact that you've been able to find them on television, number one, and number two, it's on weekends. So that just cures our post-NFL, post-college football blues, if you will, right? I mean, it's not going to last long. I mean, as far as the season goes to, I think the regular season ends on the first weekend, the second weekend of April, April 7th through the 13th. So it's still, while it's not the NFL, and it's definitely not college football, it still gives it that fix. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I mean, imagine how shocked I was to turn on the TV at my nephew's first birthday party this past weekend and watch a professional football game. You know, my brother came into the kitchen. He looked and he looked again. He's like, "That's football?" I said, "That's the XFL, bro." So, you know, I mean, it snuck up on us, right? It happened almost right after the Super Bowl, actually. So,
actually, it did, yes.
Yeah, but there's many things I love about it, man. I mean, I love the innovation, the innovative stuff. Like, not only have a 1 and 2 point conversion, you have a 3 point conversion at the end of a touchdown,
yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
all those plays necessitate running real plays, which means no kicking, no extra point kicks. I like
mm-hmm.
that a lot. And you know, for those who keep a score, like plays, you have the option of running plays with two. The 5 and the 10-yard line for the 1 and the 2 and the 3-point conversion, respectively. So that's cool. And also, I love the transparency of the replay. You know, like when when the play is under review, and you hear the communication between the head official on the field and the replay official in the booth. I like that a lot. And it's
mm-hmm.
not painstaking. And last but not least, I love the the authenticity, the realness, the rawness of the players and the coaches on the sidelines. I mean, they're mic'd up, some of them. And, you know, what's really funny, well, kind of funny in a sad way, is like when a kicker misses a kick, immediately that young lady runs in the field area, the reporter, and interviews the kicker. What was he thinking of shit like that? So I thought that was pretty funny. But all in all, I thought it was a great reintroduction, if you will, to the XFL. So what do you think, things that you took home from it, like things you liked, maybe things you found annoying, shit like that?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get an opportunity to watch the games at home. I got a chance to watch them out at sports bars, so I didn't get the audio. But I did, of course, I was able to follow in terms of recognizing the off-the-field interviews and everything. But just let's go through a brief synopsis of the history, right, and compare it to current-day
right.
XFL. So you can see, because there were a lot of things that they did that they improved on from what they did last time. First and foremost, I don't like to call them janky cities. But they're technically secondary markets, right, with the exception of New York and L.A. from the first go-round. They ended up still doing New York and Los Angeles, but they also added D.C. Tampa's a pretty good market. What are the other cities that are involved?
Houston.
So, yeah, so they got great markets where it's not Memphis, you know, and Las Vegas,
right,
where oddly enough the NFL team is moving. So they made that change, right? And one of the things that
right.
they did last time, which they tried to be hokey with it, because of course what they attempted to do the first go round was infuse a lot of professional wrestling into pro football or into football.
Right.
And one of the things they wanted to do was to create storylines by putting cameras and mics in weird places. And, of course, what they did was they did it in a creepy manner by, like, putting mics and cameras in the cheerleaders' locker room. Yes, a little sophomore.
Yeah.
But when you start to put those mics in places where football fans care about, like with the coaches, players after they make plays, officials, so you would know exactly what their thoughts are when they're making calls or doing replays. So places like that instead of trying to be creepy with it, an improvement. And then, of course, taking a lot of the things that, in terms of rules, like you said, the extra point conversions from 1, 2, and 3 points after touchdowns, and the kickoff being that that's different. Instead of everyone lining up, the defenders lining up with the kicker, they're literally lining up, about 10 to 15 yards away from the receiving team, so it's not that full speed ahead collision and cutting back on that. So I'm loving everything about the XFL right now. And then if you're a college football fan, you had the benefit of seeing a lot of players that you recognize from recent times, and also there are a lot of guys who actually had a cup of coffee in the NFL. And if you're a huge fan and you're into those secondary or even tertiary players, or even players that make the practice squad, you'll hear and you see names that you recognize from the past, and then you see that they're in the XFL, and they're trying to, Cardale Jones, what's your boy's name? The QB from Syracuse last year.
I know who you're talking about. Eric Dungy.
Dungy. So you got Dungy, Aaron Murray. So there are a ton of QBs and players out there that you recognize, a lot of names that I recognize, especially from the HBCU world. Marquez Carter, a.k.a. Mr. Excitement, playing out there in L.A. for the Wildcats. Of course, the Redskins head coach and general manager, Pep Hamilton, who played at Howard. Oddly enough, his successor at Howard, Ted White, is his quarterback's coach. You know, he's got a lot of NFL ties. Well, Pepper Johnson, who was unfortunately just relieved of his duties up in New York. And then, of course, Jerry Glanville, Jim Zorn. So there are a lot of ties to a lot of areas of football that if you're a huge football fan, you can associate with, you can associate easier to this league and make that transition into this. And it will keep your eye, but for how long is the question. The thing is, it's already surpassed in terms of ticket sales, the AAF from last year. In week two, ticket sales have already surpassed all of the ticket sales for the AAF as long as they were in existence last year. So they already have a bump up on that. Now, the thing was, the first go-round with the XFL, they were with NBC because, of course, that relationship that WWE had with Universal. Now, of course, like you said, they were Fox and with ESPN. And, it's a little bit more accessible than the AAF was, seeing as though that their games were on, with NFL Network and FS1. So, and also had the partnership with Gatorade. So they're doing a lot of things right. The thing is, though, of course, will it be sustainable? And my answer is, I hope so.
I think it will be, because they've changed a lot of their promotion and shit like that. Because I remember, to your point, when they have cameras and they're cheerleaders locker rooms, I remember one promo where they had a football player and the cheerleader, they videotaped them before a game, like having so many sexual innuendos.
Yeah,
in their comment, it's like they bring a professional, they brought professional wrestling to football, and it was a joke. I say as a 27-year-old me, found it to be hilarious, but I never took the shit seriously. Not that did much of America, because for that reason, I mean, you got guys personalizing their names back of the jerseys, like the Hammer and most infamously, He Hate Me. It's hard. I mean, even though he went on to have a good career with the Panthers after that, Bob Smart. But the point is that it's more authentic. It's real football, right?
Yeah.
You got NFLers, former NFLers, former college stars playing, to get that chance. Now, and if I'm not mistaken, I think NFL teams can draft directly from XFL players. I think I read that somewhere, where they could actually draft XFL players.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I read that somewhere. I thought I did anyway. But at any rate, the point is that it's more of a pipeline, and I think it's more of a pipeline for minority coaches, too, because,
yes,
you know, to
is.
Your point, Pep Hamilton, coach,
mm-hmm.
head coach, you have a lot more black, like, coordinators in this league, and I think it's great to see for NFL teams to see these guys do their thing, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I thought that Pip Hamilton was on his way before he was wrongly fired by Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis way back when. So
mm-hmm.
at any rate, when he was coded. But at any rate, the point is that it gives a lot of people opportunity. And one more thing I forgot to say that I like, how about the kickoff? Where the kicker is Bryce Lonesome on the 35-yard line, if I'm not mistaken. And then, basically the coverage team lines up on the return side on the 35-yard line, and the return team lines up on the 30-yard line. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, each team must have exactly, I think, 3 players on the hash marks on both sides because that move to the ball is caught. So basically, this was created. Not only is it really creative, but it also was created with player safety in mind. So that was pretty cool. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty damn cool. I said 35-yard line. The kicker, I think the kicker lines up with a 30-yard line. Excuse me. But I like the innovations. I think college football would be wise to implement some of them. I
mm-hmm.
think the NFL might take a look at them, like depending on how it all plays out. But, I mean,
mm-hmm.
that was so far so good, man. Yeah, I like the football. It's very entertaining. There was no shenanigans on the field. There were no nicknames in the back of the jerseys.
Yeah.
Just real, straight-up, hungry dudes playing football. That's what it was. And it's good that they're starting out slow, out small in terms of the number of teams, the 8 teams, and
mm-hmm.
good markets. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens going forward. So, yeah, so I think you may have other things to add to the XFL, but if we haven't covered already. But overall, I like it. I really like
yeah.
what I'm seeing this time around.
But it's just 2 quick points before we move on. One, like you
yeah.
said, the whole association with professional wrestling and how hokey it seemed, a lot of people thought that it was a predetermined like wrestling. And that was just another reason why, along with a lot of other factors, that is, Sadate, on
right.
why people wouldn't get into the game. And then to your point about minority coaches and getting an opportunity. Now, mind you, me being a huge fan of Pep Hamilton, he's a Charlotte boy, came up to D.C., so I automatically associate with him being an HBCU guy. I thought that he should have been a head coach a while ago. And an excuse that I received from, an NFL reporter that will remain nameless was that he didn't have enough experience coaching to be a head coach. Because, of course, it was at that point in time looked at that you needed to have a certain amount of or X amount of coordinating experience or assistant coach experience or even college coach experience before you can move on to become a pro coach. And if you look at most of these coaches now, a lot of them don't even have coordinating experience. Sean McVay, Joe Judge.
That's right.
The list goes on and on. And
the
guy, Pep Hamilton.
New York Giants head coach now.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
and Jay Gruden. Didn't necessarily have
yeah.
well. All he had was coordinating experience, and I thought his experience level was comparable to Pep Hamilton. But yet he was able to get a job. So I didn't want to necessarily, call racism, but at least this time, he and other black head coaches in the XFL are getting the opportunity, and a lot of assistants as well are getting an opportunity to prove that they can coach on a professional level.
Exactly. So kudos to XFL for doing this, for the forward thinking. And,
yes.
As far as that shit goes, you know how it goes. People are more comfortable with who they are with their own. And
mm-hmm.
unless we get more of that, either in ownership or front office, it is what it is. It is what
and that's
so,
the thing. The Washington president is African American. So I'm not going to say it was easier for him to do so, but that president, who also has an association working with Howard in the past, is probably familiar with Howard, and probably the first coach he thought of was Pep Hamilton, or at least one of his first couple of coaches.
And one last thing about that. Speaking of D.C., how about the crowd at Audi Stadium?
God. Man, oh, man.
How about that? They were rock and roll.
I'm disappointed that I didn't go. And I'm disappointed that I won't be able to make it this weekend either. I'm going to have to make my way before the season starts. But I really want to check out, like I said before, the L.A. Wildcats, because, of course, they have the most HBCU alums on that team. So I want to check and see what they look like. But there was talks leading up to the game that the game was sold out. Now, all of the seats weren't taken, but they still had 17,000 in an arena that I think fits 30. So that was a great turnout. And the thing is, of course, there's been a lot of conversation on why that's probably the case, especially here in D.C., with a lot of the Redskin fans here being disgruntled and still wanted to see football.
I was thinking
this was their opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Something else, man. Yeah, they're starving for some success. Speaking of HBCUs, successful HBCUs a few times. Let's segue to this. An interesting segue. Our beloved A&T, North Carolina A&T Aggies. We're both Aggies. You undergrad, me have a graduate degree from there. And for those who listen to the show often enough, you know that we tend to touch on things HBCU, so it's the sports, athletics, issues around athletics, things like that. So, Hampton did this a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. And A&T is following their footsteps. Now, A&T is moving out to MEAC, the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference, for those who don't know, to the Big South, starting on June 30th, 2021. The school's trustees voted. I don't know what the margin was, but the point is there was a majority to leave the MEAC, and here we are. Apparently, there were, rumors. I think my first cousin told me that there were rumors that A&T was monitoring how Hampton was doing in the Big South, and was looking to make a move. And I heard that FAMU was doing the same thing, just monitoring the situation as we speak. Maybe Central, North Carolina Central too. But the point is that A&T, a founding member of the MEAC, gone. We'll be going after this coming season. So, what do you think this means for HBCU athletics first? Well, actually, first I'll say this. Why do you think A&T made the move? You're more connected to this than I am. So, why do you think A&T made the move in the first place?
Okay, well, before I answer that question, I'll answer it wasn't necessarily a question, but you made a statement. How many what was the vote? According to the chancellor, Chancellor Martin, there was only one. Well, that wasn't Martin who said. I forgot who that was. I think he must have been the head of the board of trustees for A&T.
Yeah.
He said there was only one dissenter with all of the voters and the board of trustees, just one. And to answer your question, why? Before I even get to the why, actually. There have been conversations about this move about 2 or 3 years ago. I first heard about it after leaving a Celebration Bowl a couple of years ago. And when it was said to me, actually, it was said to me before Hampton made its move to the Big South. So when I was told it, I kind of scratched my head and didn't think much of it until Hampton made its move. Now, I don't know if you remember or not, we had a discussion about Hampton's move to the Big South on this show, and my comments then wasn't necessarily against Hampton making the move. It was how Hampton made the move and their reaction to the MEAC, because they still wanted to receive superlatives from the conference, and they still wanted to be eligible for the Celebration Bowl, even though they were no longer a part of the conference. And I thought all of that was asinine. And they also hurled insults at the MEAC as well. But I digress, right? Now, we fast forward. You know, it was just crazy. That entire situation was crazy. We fast forward. When I'm at the Celebration Bowl this past December, that rumor of moving to the Big South again was thrown at me. And at this point, you know, I thought to myself, anything can happen. I don't doubt anything, of course, especially after Chancellor Martin made a comment back in August of 2019. Basically, it was said it was basically an exercise in getting people's mindsets ready on a potential move, because he said, what would it be like if A&T Athletics, especially the football program, moved to the FBS level? And people questioned whether or not it would be a move. They kind of brushed it off and said it was an exercise, but in actuality, they were looking at FBS programs, and I'll get to that in a brief moment.
Wow.
Now,
fast forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll get to that in just a moment. Fast forward, like I said before, I heard news of it again this past December, thought that it was a possibility. And then not this past Friday, but the Friday prior, I get an insider tip that SID from the Big South made a comment to a fan saying that A&T's move to the Big South was imminent and they were in the process of getting ready to schedule their 2021-2022 football schedule to include Big South opponents. I was preparing to do my due diligence, but unfortunately, I was beaten to the story by my man Jeff Mills over at the News of Record over in Greensboro, where he reported that the A&T would be moving to the Big South, and it was all pending a vote on by the Board of Trustees the following day, which of course it passed. But during that press conference, it was announced that A&T had looked at least six different conferences, both on the FBS and FCS levels, as destinations to head. And when I heard that, I just scratched my head and said, wow, just like you. Now, to finally answer your question, because of course this was addressed in the press conference, this is the answer that was given to us by the athletic director, Earl Hilton. This move alone is basically to help out with travel costs. The travel costs will now be reduced by 30%, seeing as though the majority of the teams in the Big South are in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia, with the exception of three teams, Monmouth, Kennesaw State, and the soon-to-join North Alabama. And I'll get to them in just a moment.
The reason why...
What's that?
So you got it going. Got a whole lot to know there, brother.
Oh, yes. There's a whole lot involved in this, man. And that's why when people get mad and their anger and they voice their opinion, a lot of it is short-sighted because there's a lot of pieces involved in this. And sometimes it's not just an easy quick, but like I said, I'm bringing this down easily and quickly. So, one, the travel is part of it. And the other aspect of that, of course, he said that he was concerned about the welfare of the student athlete and making sure that they have a better student life mix on campus, which leads to, of course, better APR scores because you don't have students making 6, 7, and 8-hour-long trips. Now, mind you, the majority of the programs, men's basketball, women's basketball, women's volleyball, track and field, golf.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that will not be – well, bowling will stay in the MEAC, but all the other 15 programs will be moving over to the Big South. And they won't necessarily be affected by travel but so much, but the football team will. But the plus is, or the benefit is, that they will only have to make those treks every other year. Because remember, it's a home-and-home
right.
schedule, so that you rotate
right.
every year. And those furthest trips,
right.
like I said before, to Monmouth, which is in New Jersey, right outside of New York, to Kennesaw State, which is right outside of Atlanta, and to North Alabama, those are the furthest ones, which average about 6.5-7 hours worth of travel for the football team. But yet the football team is the only one that will have to make that travel. And like I said before, it will be something that will only be done every other year based upon the schedule. So, yeah, it's all back to money because, of course, the money handles the money handles the travel. And then, of course, the travel
right.
affects the students' welfare. And those are the two things that, of course, both Martin and Hilton announced. But there's some other things as well that I believe that are factors on why the move is made, even though they try to minimize those.
Well, let me – but before you go on, brother, let me ask you this. As you mentioned the NCAA looking at FBS conferences, do you have an idea – who those FBS conferences were?
You know what?
You have an idea?
Scott, I do not. The only thing that I
okay.
could do, because I was going to investigate, right? In terms of,
right.
well, I should say, guesstimate, right? Based upon
right.
the announcement that was given to us in terms of travel, I was going to take into consideration all of the conferences that would have reduced travel for A&T. And the ones that come to mind immediately, of course, are the likes of the CAA, the Colonial Association, Athletic Association, and
okay.
some of those, the SOCON, and those conferences. So, like I said before, I haven't done it yet, but once I do it, and then I'll go ahead and actually do the math, because I'm actually – I know I'm a week late, but I wanted to break down as much as possible and touch on a lot of things that other people haven't in their responses to what's been going on. I want to go ahead and break down the amount of travel that would happen in those potential conferences to pinpoint the ones that may or may not have been discussed as potential destinations for A&T.
Mm. Well, you know what? You might want to post that link up to Twitter.
Most
and Facebook.
Definitely.
I think a lot of
Most
people
definitely.
Love to see that.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people look at that. So let me ask you. So wow. So you know what? I have a feeling, man. I have a feeling that this won't be the last stop for A&T. I think that we have a very ambitious minded athletics department. From what I've seen from a distance, of what I've read, from what I've seen up close. So I don't think. I mean, the Big South is a good first step, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're looking to step up in weight class, I guess. But
mm-hmm.
I think when you mentioned that they were looking at FBS conferences, I think this is a temporary stop. I think this temporary stop may be 5, 6, 7 years, maybe 10. But I think that A&T has grown in enrollment by a lot. I think they got a lot of funding. Our alumni association is hella strong. And you
mm-hmm.
see the facilities, how they've improved. I mean, hell, I don't know if you've seen that. I mean, I'm sure you have. You're going back to homecoming much more than I have. But the wellness centers,
mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, that is a little big gym. I mean, big weight room,
mm-hmm.
wellness center. And, you know, they got their naming rights on our football stadium, like BB&T. Got the
mm-hmm.
name right there, and you know it's just they've our beloved A&T has grown leaps and bounds over
yes,
the last 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's still growing, and it's still
yes.
expanding, and it's still
yes.
changing. So
yes.
and it's to the point where it looks better than UNC Greensboro. Yes, I said it, and I'll keep saying it. I said it then, I'll say it now. But the thing is that, man, is we're growing.
Yeah.
So I love the ambition. I kind of hate the fact that they have to leave the MEAC to do it, but it is what it is. I mean, if you think big, as they say, the money, as the saying goes, scared money don't make none.
None.
If you think big, you got to act like it. And then their football team, you know how great our football team has been. It's been the best in college, in the black college sports. It's been one of the best in FCS. So why not take that next step and solidify that hold, possibly become the next, I say, North Dakota State, and then keep going from there. Keep going from there, because we've seen teams do this. We've seen Appalachian State do this. They were FCS for several years. Now they're in the Sun Belt Conference, and they hadn't missed a beat. They're still good. Hell, they've been better. They're better than some FBS division. I mean, some bigger FBS Power Five are better than.
And State is in the they are better than a couple of the Power Five, and they've beaten a couple of the Power Five schools.
Yeah.
But you know,
and
to your statement and with A&T moving up, I'm going to go ahead and say this now for the haters who are listening, because hopefully, I went ahead and I spread this this podcast within the HBCU world so that they can listen to my response. On the things that have happened, because I haven't said much. I've kind of held my tongue when I was organizing my thoughts. And as I understand, it's taken me a long time to organize my thoughts, but I got a lot of thoughts. But no, we're not necessarily cocky about this move. But I do have a lot of concerns. And like you just said, we are growing. Everything is growing with A&T as of right now. My concern is, his possible move may end up potentially hurting our growth. Yes, I said it, and I'm saying this out loud, and let me explain why.
Okay.
Straight out of the chancellor, the athletic director, and the head football coach's mouth, and I say coaches plural, with both Washington and Broadway, along with the football coach at Grambling. They've all said after winning the Celebration Bowl, it's brought a lot of eyes to the institution, and it has helped in increasing enrollment. Now, with us no longer participating in the Celebration Bowl and not being in the MEAC, those type of eyes will now be taken away from us. And I'm wondering whether or not that will hurt enrollment or not. Also, a lot of the school spirit has been affected by this move, and I'm wondering whether or not playing in an all HBCU conference will also be an effect on enrollment, because of course students are going to want to come to A&T and get the HBCU experience and be in depth in HBCU culture, mind you. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this again. HBCU culture is not only rooted in athletics. Let me repeat that again.
Right.
HBCU culture is not only rooted in athletics. But I do understand competing against your own, having your bands play against one another, the atmosphere.
Right.
All of that is completely different than playing against or performing against PWIs. And I understand that atmosphere has a certain feeling to it, and I love it with all of my heart. And my hope is that it does not affect not just enrollment, but alumni giving. Because if we do not have the finances to continue to compete in the Big South, we're going to end up going back to the MEAC. And I'm not saying that as if it's a bad thing. The thing is, there's just a lot of things that we're going to have to do in order to – excuse me, Scott. There are a lot of things that we're going to have to do financially within the athletic department in order for us to keep pace with the Big South and even potentially move on to another conference. Case in point, I attended the North Carolina A&T Charleston Southern game, football game back in September. I did so because I used to live in Charleston for a couple of years, highly familiar with Charleston Southern. Wanted to take an opportunity to see some of my folk down in the chat. Had to tell you, say what's up to them. But one of the things that I noticed was the amount of sports information directors that they had. They legit had a different sports information director for every sport. Every sport. And Charleston Southern is not a big school at all. As a matter of fact, their stadium only holds about 2,000. Stadium's not that big. School's not that big. But they have a huge athletic department. And that's one of the things that either we're going to have to keep pace with or make adjustments to so that we can keep pace with the remainder of the Big South. I don't know if necessarily Hampton has made those moves yet, but I know that the other institutions in the Big South have followed suit. Because what? Other PWI athletic departments have multiple sports information directors that makes their job easier. Because when you have an SID that's working on a bunch of sports, it's kind of straining. And I've seen and I've heard the tales of former SIDs that have had to do so for years, and they talk about it, and they just look back. Case in point, my man Ed Hill, the OG, he is a legend as it pertains to SIDs in HBCU sports. He used to be the SID over Howard before he retired. When he talked to me about what he saw at the University of Maryland as it pertains to their athletic department and their sports information department, and the fact that not only do they have an SID that only focuses on football, that SID also has an assistant. Whereas with most HBCUs, you have an SID and you have an assistant, and those two split the work amongst 15 to 16 sports. It's insane. It is insane, and that's one of the things that we have to deal with as HBCUs. But I don't know if that's going to be something that's going to have to change or not, but I just noticed that that was a small difference that I noticed between the two, and I know that there are probably going to be some things that I don't know about right now that the athletic department is going to have to do in order to keep pace, along with being able to sustain certain things in order to keep pace. But, yeah, I'm just concerned that this type of move has disgruntled a lot of people, and we may end up taking a dip financially. And like I said before, I pray that is not the case. But I understand why they made that move, because there are a lot of people, myself included, that believe that because of a lot of financial issues and accreditation problems that a couple of the programs in the MEAC are currently dealing with, that the MEAC may no longer be with us in a couple of years.
I was going to ask you that question, brother. What do you think this will do to black college athletics, HBCU athletics going forward? Because you sort of touch on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, like I said earlier, I've heard that FAMU is monitoring the situation. I heard that, and it wouldn't be a surprise if Central is monitoring the situation, because Central is also very ambitious. I mean, hell, they moved to the MEAC, and even though Winston State moved back when they did it, Central stayed the course, and they're being rewarded for it. So what do you think this means going forward to HBCUs and HBCU sports?
My prayer is that it doesn't affect HBCU sports at all, other than the fact that a giant has left the MEAC. That's the only thing that I'm hoping. And, yes, to all you haters out there, I said A&T was a giant in the MEAC. Yes, I said it. Bring up 0-27 all you want. I said it. Giant. Deal with it. So, to that point, like I said before, I hope nothing happens to the MEAC, because I love all HBCU sports. I love to see us get as much exposure as possible. I love the culture of HBCU sports. I would love to see these programs continue to compete against one another. But as we know, HBCUs as a whole have dealt with financial issues, one of those being South Carolina State. And to quote their president, they have been living, quote unquote, paycheck to paycheck in terms of trying to keep themselves afloat. And they've asked the state of South Carolina for over $40 million so they can continue to operate. And, of course, a lot of those funds would be going to their athletics. If they continue to have these issues, they may end up having to close their doors. But they've been resourceful for years because this issue has been going on for some time. But the thing is, how much longer can that last? The one that's more of an immediate issue is with Bethune-Cookman. They've been dealing, like I said earlier, with accreditation issues. And if memory serves me correctly, they will be up for accreditation this March. And according to their president, 2020 is the year that they either turn the corner or the year that they close their doors. And if they end up closing their doors, that is the closure of an athletic program. And if Bethune-Cookman, if they either have problems with accreditation and they stay open, student-athletes aren't going to want to go and play at Bethune-Cookman because they can't get an accredited degree. So if you lose Bethune, guess who else you're going to lose? You're going to lose Florida A&M. I'm not even saying if you lose Bethune and South Carolina State, because if you lose them both, then, of course, you're really, in terms of travel, looking for Florida A&M to make a huge hole in terms of traveling, skipping over Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina to compete against a team in Virginia, and then the likes of schools in Maryland and D.C. and Delaware. That's a whole lot of travel. And for those that remember, when Kellen Winslow, yes, that Kellen Winslow, senior that is, was the athletic director at Florida A&M, one of the things he investigated was a potential move to the SWAC because, of course, it would help reduce their travel costs. You see how that comes up again? That's something that is big within HBCU sports, is looking for ways to cut costs. And one of the major ways they try to look to do so is to help reduce travel costs. And if Bethune leaves, FAMU is right out the door with them. So that means you would end up losing North Carolina A&T, Hampton, Savannah State, and potentially Bethune-Cookman and Florida A&M. Note, I didn't even say South Carolina State, but that's still the potential too. So if you lose all of those programs, we're looking at the Big East Junior. The MEAC is going to implode unless they end up calling up other HBCUs to join them from the D2 ranks. But, of course, in order to do that, you would need to not only generate funds but sustain funds to play on the D1 level, which is a problem. Don't believe me? Ask Winston-Salem State. Or they can go ahead and poach PWIs from other conferences to help join them in the MEAC as well. So those are the only options I see for a sustained MEAC. Now, they can survive with the programs that they currently have. The key is, can those programs survive, period, in order for the conference to survive?
Right. So,
and like you said earlier, real quick, I'm sorry to interrupt, Scott, but like you said earlier, North Carolina Central is one of those schools that is very ambitious with them coming up from the CIAA to the MEAC, but they're also probably eyeing the situation with how A&T is dealing with it because they see the backlash that the university is receiving, and they're probably being a little trepidatious on how they handle it if they do it.
If it's an optive word.
Yes.
So I was going to say earlier, since all this transition is potentially going to hit the meat due to financial reasons and travel, like you take away a travel part, like in the case of Bethune-Cookman closed the doors, why would FAMU want to travel, right? So that leads to me to think that the SWAC is going to become bigger. It's going to grow.
If that's the case.
Because I don't, because again, to your point, I don't see FAMU want to travel all around to the other conferences. Granted, I'm not familiar with other FCS conferences outside of the SWAC, the NEAC, the Big South, a couple others, too, the CAA, the Colonial. But I think that I would think that if all that transition comes about the NEAC, I would think that FAMU's next up would be the SWAC. And so the SWAC, therefore, would become bigger. And, you know, SWAC, I always say that SWAC is a black SEC. They love their football in that conference. And
they show it
at the gate. So I think that would be great for FAMU, but, I mean, who the hell knows what happened? So this is an interesting time, not only in the MEAC, but in HBCU athletics as a whole.
Because if they see
Hampton doing well with the transition, if they see A&T doing well with the transition, hell, I don't know. I mean, Tennessee State seems to be doing all right in their conference in the Ohio Valley. So, you know, it could be the signal of a new era. We have more and more of those HBCUs, ambitious HBCUs, that are growing financially, and from the student enrollment standpoint, it's going to be interesting to see how this thing looks in the next 5 to 10 years.
And Scott, before we move on, just real quick, note that everything we just talked about and all that information I just gave you, that is just a piece of everything that's involved in it. I didn't talk about APR stuff. I didn't talk about the network deals with the Big South and the fact that the MEAC and SWAC doesn't have one. As a matter of fact, the MEAC and SWAC are the only two conferences on the FCS level that do not have a network. So I didn't even talk about that or a bunch of other stuff that could be potentially involved in this entire move. This thing has so many pieces involved in it, man, it's not even funny. That's why when people try to simplify it as quickly and as small and minute as they do, it's laughable and insulting at the same time. And that's why, man, I just shake my head with a lot of the comments that people have made. I know that a lot of people are hurt, and I know a lot of people find this funny. But, man, this is something that should be a mirror to a lot of HBCUs. Not just the HBCUs, but the conferences themselves. Dennis Thomas, where moves need to be made in order for us to be able to sustain us. Because that's, if you look at it as a whole, that's what this move was for. It was to help A&T be self-sufficient and sustain itself. Because if we can't help us, we got to help us, if that makes any sense.
Right, exactly.
So,
all right, that's a great discussion. That's why I was excited to talk about this with you on tonight, because I knew that you was very closely connected to HBCU athletics because of what you do, i.e. HBCU sports, where they wrap up all things HBCU sports, right? So that's why I was excited to have you on, but it's a lot of information. I'm thankful that you shared it. And this is a conversation that we can continue online with some of our fellow alumni of A&T and others from PWIs or other HBCUs who are just curious.
Yeah.
To learn more about it and why it is taking place. I mean, it's very fascinating. And one last thing before we do move on, speaking of money, ESPN did a write-up on the Central basketball team.
Yeah,
you know, with the coach talking, I forget the coach's basketball's name, it slipped my mind.
LaVell Moulton.
LaVell Moulton, right. How he talked about the weariness of the travel, because they're traveling by bus. They don't fly. And so they talked about the first couple of weeks of the season, went on the road and get what they call, like, I guess, like a better term, paycheck games.
Yes.
And how much it takes a toll on them, on their psyche.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to think about that, too. So to your point, being the Big South will help A&T alleviate a lot of those expenses because, A, they don't have to travel as much during conference play, but, B, to your point, they have broadcast deals, the conference.
Yeah.
They have broadcast deals. They have A&T immensely. So this is going to be very interesting going forward as far as monitoring the situation. So it's very fascinating. Right quick, speaking of basketball, the NBA trade deadline came and went. Not too many major trades happened. Maybe the most major of them all was Wiggins, Andrew Wiggins, being traded from Minnesota. Wiggins from Minnesota to the Golden State Warriors for D'Angelo Russell, and which me, I think it was a wash. I mean, I think Wiggins needed a change of scenery. Because he wasn't going to be that guy. They paid him to be, Minnesota paid him to be the guy, but he doesn't have any dog in him. He's more comfortable on the third or fourth scoring role. So that would help him. But that's a lot of money for Golden State to take on. So I'm wondering if that's really the last move that Golden State would make because, you know, this thing called free agency in the summer. I don't know if they want to be solid with his contract going forward.
I don't know. The way that the team GM sounded, I was watching the Golden State Laker game this past weekend. You know, he was very excited about the potential of Klay, Steph, Draymond, and Andrew playing together. And you have that combination with their potential draft pick coming up this season. And a lot of the draft picks that they picked up via trade this past trade deadline, there's nothing but potential growth and potential opportunities with this organization. So I am very intrigued to see what they're going to do in the next not only couple of months, because they're saying that, of course, Steph comes back after the All-Star break. But also what this team will be capable or what this team will do this summer as it pertains to both the draft and free agency and what type of moves that they'll make there and how that would potentially aid that organization. Now, I wasn't actually shocked that they made the trade in terms of dealing D'Angelo Russell because I didn't think necessarily that he was a fit with that with the Golden State Warriors, because I just thought he was just another point guard that would potentially play alongside another point guard, but a different type of point guard, and didn't think that it would necessarily work well to their favor to have both of them on the court at the same time. So to see that they ended up using him as trade bait was cool. So, you know, I'm intrigued to see what this number one overall draft pick in Wiggins will look like with a fully loaded Golden State team.
Interesting. That should be very, very interesting. So we'll see. But that's gonna be interesting with the Warriors, how it'll affect them going forward. If they have cap space and they have a high draft pick, they'll be getting Klay Thompson back, they'll be getting Steph Curry back. It's about to get interesting next season. It's about to get for Golden State. So kick them while they're down now because they won't be down for long, brother. So that's
and they're
going to
have a top five draft pick, at least a lottery pick. So, yeah, it's going to be insane to see what this organization looks like next season with everyone
We'll put a red ball on this podcast with this, brother. Tom Brady. Going from football to basketball to football again. You know, like, it's a lot of moving parts going on in the NFL. You know, the NFL the Chargers just announced that they are severing their relationship with Philip Rivers. And you got cryptic tweets and videos from Brady about where he's going to go. They got, apparently, someone quoted Patriots owner Robert Kraft as saying that, you know, it's best for him being Brady to explore free agency options via free agency. I think a lot of it probably. I want to think a lot of it's smokescreen, but I think Tom wants to get paid, and it's not that he needs the money. I mean, hell, he's married to Gisele Bündchen, but he's about respect with him because he's been taking pay cut after pay cut after pay cut the last several seasons. So it's time for him to get his cheddar. Now, but there are lots of interesting scenarios out there where he could be. He could be in San I don't care if they're Los Angeles. I'll call it San Diego. He'll be in San Diego, be in the Chargers, right? And I don't think the Oakland, the Las Vegas Raiders thing is real, to be honest with you. But there are options out there. Indianapolis is another option that he could explore. But where do you think, in your heart of hearts, what do you think Brady will end up next season?
If you were to put a gun to my head and I had to pick three places, it would be in this order. Well, it would be from 3-1. The Chargers, third. Number two would be Dallas. Number one is New England. And the reason why I say those places is because those three teams are playoff ready, if not championship ready. Now, mind you, the Chargers, they had a lot of losses, but they also had a lot of losses that were 7 points or less. So just like the year before, when they had a lot of 7 point or less wins, you know, just the bounce of the ball one way, and also dealing with the Melvin Gordon not being there for the majority of the year, along with Derwin James, they had a lot of losses. You get those two Pro Bowlers back, and you add in Tom Brady, and then along with the other young weapons that they have on the offensive side of the ball and that young defense that they have, who knows what that team could do, right? Then, of course, he has the familiarity of being in Boston, but he also said that if he stays in New England, they're going to have to bring some skill position guys to play alongside him.
Right.
And with Dallas, man, I hate to say this out loud, but they have skill position guys. They gave the money to Zeke and Amari Cooper. I think he has one more year left on his deal or whatever, if it's not already up, but they can always bring him back. So they have talent on the offensive side of the ball and defensive side of the ball. The thing is, of course, you know, being able to get them to galvanize and perform, and then to I guess to have Tom there, it'll be interesting to see whether or not he fits. But that is another team that is playoff ready. And I think he's only going to really entertain – of course he's only going to entertain places that are playoff ready. And those are the three right there on top of my head. But the interesting name that I heard as a dark horse today – was the Carolina Panthers. Don't know how much truth it is to it. But like you're about to say, they got the cap money. They got the defense.
They got cap money. Especially if they get rid of Cam.
If they get rid of Cam, there's another 19 they can go ahead and play around with too. So it'll be interesting to see where he ends up going. But we all know it's going to end up being a domino effect. Because, of course, Drew Brees is involved. Phillip Rivers is involved. Jameis is involved. Tannehill out there in terms of quarterback position. Bridgewater. There are a lot of QBs that are out there to be had and a lot of teams that have QB needs. It's going to be very interesting to see how they're approached.
The Panthers. That sounds very tantalizing. And look for – and it wouldn't surprise me that David Tepper, a very forward-thinking owner, wouldn't surprise me if he pulled that off. Because, again, the Panthers, I think they have the cap room. They got the skill players. They got the defense, albeit minus Luke Kuechly. And the market is centralizing. I mean, Charlotte market is not a bad market. And, you know, he could play – Brady could play in the NFC – and go up against Lashley Reese and play it in for another 2-3 years because they got an offensive line that got needs a running, a reliable running game and Christian McCaffrey and company. So that's very, very interesting. I think he's going to go back to New England. I think he's going to go back to New England. I agree with you. I think that your top choice, most of the likelihood where he'll end up He'll end up back in New England. But that means what will be done about Bill Belichick, because I don't think they could take another year together. I don't think they despise each other, but I think one wants the credit over the other so bad. I just don't see them being together for another 2-3 years. So that's my only trepidation with that, but I just don't see any other place outside of the Chargers, maybe, and possibly Dallas. But would the Dallas really move on from Dak Prescott? Would he really move on from a younger guy for a guy who's on the last leg of his career, maybe 2-3 years left? Would he really do that?
The only reason why I think that they would, because like you said, he only has another 2-3 years left on the books. They could always bring in a younger guy or draft a younger guy after he leaves. And if that means getting a Super Bowl within those 3 years, they'll take that chance.
I guess Jerry Jones would definitely do that. The more I think about it, the more I think that's the case. But
this is a Super Bowl star team.
Yep, that's true. It's been, over 20? It's been, since 1996?
Six.
1995
yes,
season?
Yeah, 1996,
So that's almost 25 years. So,
yeah,
I think Jerry Jones would do anything to win a Super Bowl without Jimmy Johnson, without Jimmy Johnson's plays, because, remember, Barry Switzer won with Jimmy Johnson's players.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think Jerry Jones, to his point, to his credit, I think he would just say, fuck the future. I want another one now. Whenever one or two now. I think that's definitely the case, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man. Thanks all for joining me, man. I thoroughly enjoyed the HBCU discussion with regards to the future, what HBCU is moving to, like PWI conferences, but. Let's continue the conversation online. Let's share some information online on Twitter and Facebook so we can keep the conversation going. I think that would be great.
Not a problem. And like I said, once I'm done with these stories, I'll most definitely share the link with you and your fan base.
Cool. Thanks a lot, bro. Peace out.
Peace.
All right, that's my guy, D. Nash. Check him out on Facebook Live. Every Tuesday night, I'm sorry, Sleazy Radio on Facebook Live every Tuesday night, my bad, as well as the Yard Search HBCU Sports, we're asking about all things HBCU Sports, as well as Hero Sports. Thank y'all for tuning in to the Clown Hour podcast with Scott Burks, signing off, 06.
Nice.